Coming up on Tech News Today, Asus has an avalanche of products coming out of Computex. Also, Apple might be closer to their iRadio service. And Twitter gives Android a gift. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, June 3rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's what we love, our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by TechServe. TechServe assists U.S. businesses of all sizes with their technology needs, including Apple, Avid, Adobe, and HP solutions. Visit techserve.com/TNT and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is a show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Asus announced several new products at Computex in Taipei. The one that seems to be turning the most heads is the Transformer Book Trio, an 11.6-inch tablet-laptop hybrid that runs Android and Windows 8 at the same time on two different processors. Asus also unveiled the ZenBook Infinity laptop with a Gorilla Glass lid, an updated Transformer iPad Infinity tablet, the MemoPad HD7, which is essentially a Nexus 7 with a rear camera, and the 6-inch PhonePad Note.
Android users who felt that their lives weren't complete without an app that helps them create 6-second videos and share them socially can rejoice, because Twitter has released Vine for Android. The Vine app is a free download for anyone running Android 4.0 or higher. Android users are receiving Vine access about 5 months after iOS users did. That was back in January after its acquisition by Twitter. On iOS alone, Vine already has 13 million users.
Bloomberg reports that Microsoft will cut the price of Windows RT to get more tablet makers on board with that operating system. Windows RT is about 6 months old and hasn't made a significant dent in the tablet space. Bloomberg says the price cuts affect Windows RT for small-sized tablets.
Researchers from the Georgia Institute of Technology claim to have developed a smartphone charger that can install malware on any iOS device. Billy Lau, Yongjing Chang, and Chengyu Song expect to debut the hack at the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas, which starts July 27th. The group has already contacted Apple about the exploit.
As the clock ticks down to WWDC next week, both CNET and the New York Times are reporting that Apple's reached a deal with Warner Music over the weekend for its so-called iRadio service, along with Universal, and that brings it up to two of the three major music labels. The deal with Universal was for recorded music rights, but not music publishing, apparently. The partnership with Warner includes both. However, Sony Music still has yet to ink any type of agreement with Apple.
According to a new report from Kantar World Panel Comtech, Windows Phone now has 5.6% of the U.S. smartphone market. Last year at the same time, Windows Phone had 3.8% of the market. If you're wondering which OS has the most market share, it's Android, of course, with 51.7%.
Intel released final details on the Haswell series of chips set to release tomorrow, June 4th. Most of the announcement confirms what we already know. Haswell will provide up to 9.1 hours of HD video playback on an Ultrabook class Core i7, thanks to a drop in power requirements from 20 watts for the Ivy Bridge to 15 watts for the Haswell chipset. Quad-core desktop parts start at $192 for the i5-4570, $242 for an unlocked i5-4670K, and $339 for the i7-4770K. Dual core prices should be coming soon.
Say goodbye to the Yahoo you knew and perhaps even loved. The company is shuttering its classic email interface today. Users who choose to upgrade to the new interface will have to agree to Yahoo's updated terms of service and privacy policy, which includes the acceptance of automated content scanning and analyzing of your communications content with Yahoo users to deliver product features, relevant advertising, and abuse protection. So there's that.
Apple begins its trial today over allegations that it conspired with publishers to raise the price of ebooks. The U.S. Justice Department filed its case against Apple and five of the six largest U.S. book publishers in April 2012. The five publishers agreed to a settlement, paying a collective $164 million and eliminating prohibitions on wholesale discounts. The government wants an order blocking Apple from engaging in similar conduct.
Your face is safe from Google Glass for now. On a Google Plus post in the Glass channel, Google says it will reject any glassware that uses facial recognition until it has strong privacy protections in place. If you're wondering, glassware is Google's name for apps that run on glass using the Mirror API.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ring Central. When we built that studio up there in Petaluma, California, one of the things Leo was trying to figure out is we got these people all over the place working at desks. We're going to need phones, and cell phone service is a little wonky. We need to have desk phones, but he didn't want to run a big, expensive PBX system. He didn't want to run a traditional thing, wanted to do cloud-based stuff, you know, dealing with faxes in your email, that sort of thing. That's why when Russell said, you got to try Ring Central, no-brainer. Ring Central has zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain, and allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. You can get our voicemail and our email, fax messages on your smartphone, and now they have a new feature, Business SMS. They didn't even have this when we set it up. You can now send text messages to customers and colleagues from your business phone number. So you don't have to use your personal number if you need to text somebody. You can use the business number. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now. Do it. 30-day risk-free trial. Why not? They have a special offer for our listeners, too. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Feld, were you listening? It's 800-543-9980. Or you can just go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com. Promo code TWIT. We thank Ring Central for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, very happy to have Peter Wells from Australia back on the show, a.k.a. Full-Time Casual on Twitter. Welcome back, Peter.
Why, thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Thank you again, as always, because you're in Australia, for getting up either late or early. We're not, we haven't quite decided.
It's a stupid o'clock. We'll just go with that.
Fair enough. Let's start off with the avalanche of ASUS announcements. We heard some of them in the news fuse there. That Transformer Book Trio is interesting. They're calling it a trio, by the way. If you're like, well, wait a minute. It's an Android tablet detachable from a laptop. That's only two, because it has Windows 8 and Android. They say you can also dock it. They have something called PC Station that lets it hook up to an external monitor and keyboard and act as a desktop. Another thing there, 64 gigabytes of tablet storage and 750 to a terabyte, 750 gigabytes up to a terabyte on the laptop side of it. There was also that Gorilla Glass ZenBook Infinity laptop that was kind of cool, and some of those other updates to things like the phone pad, transformer pad. Peter, which of these caught your eye the most? It seemed like the Zen Infinity and maybe the Transformer Book Trio were the ones getting the most buzz.
The Transformer is a weird one. I mean, I've seen people try to pull this off before, and I don't know. I've never held a Transformer in my hands yet. I haven't held one of these kind of half tablet, half laptop things in my hands yet, but I'm really curious too, because I just kind of don't see, I don't know, right now I've got an iPad and I've got a laptop, and that does me fine, but maybe I'm just being an old man about that. The other thing I thought was really interesting was the fact that the MemoPad HD7 is now $129. That I just can't see how much lower these prices can go for tablets.
Yeah, and that's an emerging markets only price. So obviously they're doing their best to get it down. I don't know if we'll be able to get our hands on that or not, but it's getting close to that $99 magic price point. Ooh, I know what you're
absolutely
saying. You excited about any of these? Transformer Book Trio gonna make its way into your life soon?
The Trio, I think, is actually quite intriguing. The idea of having both
intriguing.
Yes, that's, I misspoke. I meant to say that. Thanks, Tom. But I do like the idea of having one device that runs pretty much everything you want on one device. The fact that they're using two processors in there makes it more interesting to me, because they could just do this thing where you have a software layer like BlueStacks, but this idea that you could have both running at the same time and switch modes whenever you want, it seems like it could be the one device that gets shared the most in the house, that kind of thing, when you want to use a Windows device to dock as a desktop, or when you want to use just, you know, Android gaming. So I think That one is really interesting. I don't know if it's going to be a huge hit, but it's the most interesting to me.
I like this idea of dual operating systems. I always have. I'm a big fan of virtualization or dual boot, any of that sort of thing. But it never seems to catch on. It never seems to be the thing that really works for people because I think people just want to live in one operating system. Sarah, any of these things catch your eye?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably one of those people, Tom, who thinks like, one operating system is fine. I'm not so interested in buying a new Transformer Book Trio just because I can play around with Windows and Android at the same time. But there are those people out there. A lot of these seem like a really perfect device for, at least a moderate segment of people who like that whole hybrid design. I think the more of these that continue to come out, and as Peter noted, the more that the prices drop, mean that people can experiment and say, oh, I don't know, I'll pick up a Memo Pad HD7. Why not? Let's give it a whirl. Maybe this is the tablet that's going to work for me. And if it doesn't do everything that I need it to do, well, I didn't spend $500 on it, you know, the way that you'd have to with something like an iPad or a Surface Pro. So I think in general, the market is kind of getting flooded, but that's kind of a good thing too for a choice.
Yeah, it's definitely good for choice. I don't know if anybody needs Gorilla Glass on the lid. I mean, I guess that's nifty. But they say the drop test is not going to break. Does that concern any of you?
Well, a shiny fingerprint magnet. I think HP did something similar. The claim was, if, at least with HP, they were saying that the radio antennas were underneath the lid, so at least it was going to get better.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. They tried to convince us that was the practical reason.
Yeah, so potentially, I just think it's going to look shiny when you have those bright lights at Best Buy or somewhere. But I'm also looking at this with Asus. They kind of seem to be doing a Samsung style, like, let's make everything in every which variety, and then let's see who's going to pick up what. If it worked for Samsung, maybe it'll work for Asus.
You know, I almost feel like we're starting to see Computex encroach a little bit on CES territory. Not that it's past it in any way, but a lot more announcements. Acer had a bunch of announcements there, and it's just kicking off. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on what other stuff comes out of here. Meanwhile, Apple, apparently very close to that vaunted radio or subscription music service they've been supposedly going to launch since, back when they bought Lala.
Yeah, a bunch of reports. New York Times is saying that over the weekend, Apple signed a deal with Warner Music, as Sarah mentioned in the news fuse, and it's for its rumored internet radio service, which Apple has never, ever confirmed they were doing. Apple has both the recorded music rights and the music publishing rights for Warner, only recorded rights for Universal Music Group has nothing with Sony right now. So if you wanted Lady Gaga, they don't have that just yet. The Times is saying that Apple wants to unveil its radio service by WWDC on June 10th. So that's pretty dang soon. Negotiations have been stalled, though, because labels and music publishers, they want higher royalty rates and guaranteed minimum payments. So it's all about money when it comes to this deal. Peter, do you think that Apple can lock up the rest of the labels before a WWDC launch?
Oh, I don't know if they can make it by June 10. That'll be really interesting to see. But it really does remind me of when the iTunes Store finally came to Australia. There was about 9 months of negotiating on that part as well. I think the record industry at the time there was using us as a test case for variable pricing. And so, there was this huge, it was about 9 months worth of delays. And then finally, Apple just launched the store without Sony. So it's interesting that Sony are again the people who seem to be holding off in these negotiations. But I wonder if Apple will just kind of push through if they get, say, three of the four.
So, Sarah, when they launch this product, if it ever does come out, do you think that Apple would go ahead and not launch with every label? Considering there's so much competition right now in the U.S., it seems like everybody's got every label locked up. Wouldn't the Apple service look weak if they didn't have everybody signed up?
Yeah, they would. And people would point fingers saying, well, Apple doesn't have the negotiating power that it used to have. But I think that they would do it anyway, because the whole thing with Apple, and this is where Apple has a leg up on another service like Pandora, that is, has a royalty-based model, but doesn't have any money because of that whole thing, is studies have shown that streaming music and people who are able to listen to a lot more music, you know, for some sort of a lower rate, do end up buying a lot of music. And if Apple can tie that into the iTunes store, which historically artists are happier with because album sales are better than streaming residuals for them, then Apple is stronger. And if it's got Universal and Warner and the model is proven and it looks good and people are happy with it, And there's just a matter of time before Sony has to buckle because they won't want to be left out of something that is deemed a success. Is it going to happen by next week? I certainly hope so. I know that there's, you know, there are people looking at some of the developer sessions, you know, talking about, you know, certain parts of iOS or certain sessions that are on the schedule for WWDC next week. And there's sort of like a TBD on many of them. And so people are saying, you know, many of these might be placeholders based on how it goes with iRadio over the next 7 days or so.
Tom, even if Apple can line up every single label, have it ready for June 10th, let's say even launches that day, is there anything Apple can do to really differentiate its product from everybody else? There's just so much competition right now.
Well, it used to be, I would say, that it didn't matter, that if Apple put its magic spin on it, that everyone would think it was awesome, even if it wasn't that different, because that has been the case in the past when they've launched things. But they haven't had much success with iCloud. The tenor of talk about Apple has changed over the past year to be less admiration and more skepticism that they've, you know, maybe lost their edge a little bit. So I think they kind of do have to perform a little better, and I think they would have to have all three to really turn people back to iTunes. I've left it. I use Amazon now to manage all my music. That was just recently. So I think they need to make a splash. And if they don't have all three, and they don't have some crazy cool way of managing your music with this, I don't think they make that big splash that they need to.
As iTunes gets more and more bloated and the rumor of this iRadio being built into iTunes, it seems like it could be very difficult to even use, considering how difficult iTunes is to use at this point. It seems to have outgrown what it was meant for, which is a music manager, by having all of these extra features. Unless Apple can somehow simplify and make it easier to use, I don't see how this is going to be that great or big a competitor when Google's out there and Pandora's out there as well.
I mean, can I just bring up my hope and dream for iTunes is to once again only be about music? You know, make the movies and the TV shows something else entirely, put them in their own product category, and then have iTunes and iRadio, if indeed that's what it's called, its own entity, so it's not bloated and confusing. You know, break out the App Store, have all this stuff separate. Should not all be called iTunes.
Okay, is that why it's called Tunes? I'd forgotten that. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. So that's all rumor. We'll find out next week at WWDC, June 10th. We'll be covering it live at live.twit.tv on Monday. But Twitter has, in fact, released a new version of Vine for Android.
Yyeah, that's right. It's available now in the Google Play Store if you're running Android 4.0 and up. And this is, I don't know, if you want to compare it to something like how long Android users had to wait to get access to Instagram, it's 5 months after the iPhone world got access to Vine. And Vine was something that was basically a company that was in stealth mode, and Twitter bought it before it was ever public, and then Twitter launched it as a Twitter entity for the iPhone only. You know, I've used Vine. I use it here and there. Every so often, I find it to be really convenient to take, you know, short videos of something or other. But I don't use it very often. The service does claim that it has about 13 million users since launch. So since January, and that's all on iOS. You have to figure, well, at least having availability on Android could really bump up those numbers. Of those 13 million users, I'd like to know how many people are even monthly active users. But at least they've signed up. Still to come for the Android version are a few things that are lacking as of launch. Access to the front-facing camera, push notifications, some hashtag mention capability, searching for people or tags. Although the Android version does do something, at least on a couple different phones, that the iPhone version won't. It'll support zooming on both the Galaxy S4 and the HTC One. So at least right off of the bat, there's some interesting features for Android. Jason, I know you and Eileen Rivera, another Android user, of course. I noticed you guys talking on Twitter about, remember when Instagram came to Android and there was this whole backlash from the iPhone user saying they're going to ruin it. There's too many people now. Does anyone worry about that with Vine as well? Peter, do you use Vine? do you care?
No, actually, you know what? I don't really care. And I don't think that, you know, Vine is going to be suddenly ruined by Android users. I mean, it's 6-second video. How much can you ruin? But I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Vine. And I think you made a really great point when you said that how many are active users. I've still got it on my iPhone, but I haven't used it in ages. But look, I've got a Samsung Galaxy S3. I'll see how it performs on that. But that'll probably be it.
I don't know. It's fun. Obviously, it kind of falls. It's easy to draw the parallel between Instagram and Vine in this regard, in that it started on iPhone, iOS, built up a pretty large following, and then suddenly here come the Android folks to kind of encroach on the party. But I think if you asked anyone at Instagram whether it was a good move for them to open it up to Android, I'm pretty sure they'd all say yes. And then initially, though, what you end up seeing, and I'm sure you're going to see a lot of this over the next, you know, coming days, is new users that have heard a lot about it, using it, but still don't quite know the, in air quotes, the right way to use it, right? When Instagram first came online, suddenly you had all these people taking pictures of just anything. And I think over time they realized, like, well, actually, Instagram's really good for creating photos like that, you know, have some sort of like artistic element or some sort of kind of take on something, as opposed to just posting anything there. Maybe you see the same thing in Vine. So in the short term, it might be a little noisy. One thing I will tell you from just using the app this morning, man, those comments are out of hand. All caps locked and all saying, follow me, follow me, follow me, follow me. It was like, I can't look at this. It's too noisy.
But wait, are people were using Instagram when it came to Android. Are people actually still using Vine?
I don't know. It's
almost
a good question.
Never see it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, Instagram had 30 million iPhone users when it launched on Android. It was a you know, crazy runaway success, more than anybody thought. When it opened up to Android, they gained another million followers in like half a day, in 12 hours. And again, yeah, like Jason said, it calmed down a little bit after that point. But Instagram is one of these services that was very groundbreaking. Even if you don't like the idea of photo filters, I mean, everything now is the Instagram of X.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think mm-hmm. that there's mm-hmm. any type of comparison with something like Vine. Vine is sort of like, hey, that's pretty cool. But I have to find reasons to use it rather than being drawn to it. I don't know, Tom. What do you think?
Is this, I'm with you right there. Like, I have to think of I haven't been using Vine. I should come up with a reason. It just doesn't naturally come up. Like, oh, I'm going to Vine this right now.
I guess I'm the only one who's missing Vine. I have Vine on my iPad. I used to use it a lot. And then I keep seeing it show up on Twitter because it's always – whoever I'm following, apparently, they like to use Vine. I end up clicking on it. I watch the little video. Then I look at my Android phone. I was like, I can't use this for Vine. So I forget about it time and time again. And so I just posted a little quick Vine now just to test it. It seemed really slow. So I guess they're really getting hit because they are probably getting tons of users added right now.
As having never been a user of Vine before, I will say the one thing that's intriguing to me about it and the way that I would probably end up using it is more in the creative element, right? Like creating just stupid little cheesy stop motion things as opposed to, oh, this is a really great moment. I'm going to take 6 seconds of video of it and it's not going to make much sense. You know, use it creatively. I don't know. I think there's something to that.
I want a quality 6 seconds. That's what you want.
I want the nugget.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. Would you like some quick cash in your pocket without having to do anything untoward or even anything much of a hassle? How about just cleaning out your old gadgets? How about if you're about to get a new phone, you just sell them your old phone, and then you can take 30 days to get your new phone before you send them the old phone, but you still have locked in a price? That's what Gazelle is all about. If you want a Samsung Galaxy S4, an HTC One, or an iPhone 5, before you upgrade, go to gazelle.com, type in the name of your old phone, your old gadget, find out what it's worth, and lock in that price. You can lock it in for 30 days. You got 30 days to get the device to them so you can go about all of your other business and importing your data and wiping your data and all that stuff. And then once you're ready, you send it to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. They pay for the shipping. They'll even give you a box in a lot of cases. And you, once they get it, you get paid fast by check, PayPal, or Amazon gift card. In fact, you get 5% extra if you choose an Amazon gift card. And Gazelle is now buying back a larger selection of tablets. In addition to the iPad, you can now sell your select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, and Asus tablets to Gazelle as well. So if you're looking at some of these crazy new things coming out of Computex, sell your old tablet. Lock it in for 30 days before you get your new one. Go to gazelle.com right now. Get an offer. You get paid in cash, and you get paid fast. What's your iPhone, Samsung, and other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. New numbers. We always get IDC, Gartner numbers. Kantar World Panel's another one that tracks smartphone market share. What are they saying about the landscape of the smartphone world, Ayaz?
It's being shaken up by Windows Phone by locking up 5.6% of the U.S. market. That's what Microsoft has right now. Last year, it was 3.8%. And Kantar World, what do they call it? World Panel, Comtech, great name. They look at 3 months of data at a time. They're saying that right now, who is buying Windows Phone? If you want to know where people are coming from, 23% came from Android. So they switched from Android to Windows Phone. 25% came from another Windows device. 42% came from a feature phone device. The leaders, of course, are Android and iOS. Android with 51.7% and iOS with 41.4% of the U.S. market. And Kantar says that the Nokia Lumia devices were the key models driving Windows Phone sales. Peter, the thing is, a lot of people think the smartphone wars are pretty much over. Two-horse race kind of deal. But the thing is, do you think Microsoft should be going after the other 50% of phone users, just the feature phones? Because 42% came from feature phones.
That's a great point. Absolutely, they should be going after that market. I've tried a Windows Phone. I've had Windows Phone 7, 7.5 and 8 now. And it's really hard when you switch from an Android or an iOS device to Windows Phone. There are still just so many gaps in that market. And I guess if you're moving from a feature phone to Windows Phone, then you might not notice that, say, Instagram isn't there or Vine isn't there or anything else. But you really do feel it if you're going from one of the more established smartphones to Windows Phone. So, yeah, absolutely. They should be going after that market completely.
Tom, the thing is, if you're moving from a feature phone to a smartphone, you got to learn a new operating system no matter what, because feature phones are a lot dumber than these smartphones are supposed to be. Does Windows Phone have an interface that can be attractive to the first-time user?
Yeah, I think that is one of Windows Phone's strengths, is that it is attractive to the first-time user. When you pick up a Windows Phone, most people go, "Ooh, that's cool. I like that." I've seen that happen a lot. So their problem is getting the smartphone users to move over. They'd say, like, wait a minute, do they have the apps? I'm not sure it's the ecosystem I want to transition into, et cetera, et cetera. So they may have a better advantage. I also like this idea that feature phone, I never put it together. Feature phone is just kind of a euphemism for dumb phone. So if you have friends that you don't want to insult, say, oh, you're just my feature friend.
So what do you think about the hardware differentiation? If these phones have, you know, pretty much similar operating systems at this point. Android's got tons of skinned versions of it, to the point where you don't even recognize an HTC phone from a Samsung because they have all their bells and whistles. Can the hardware make a big difference, especially with something like the Lumia?
I suppose so. I think, you know, the numbers that are coming from people who had never had a smartphone before saying, my first smartphone is going to be a Windows Phone, is interesting. But what about that 23% that came from Android? You know, is it because the Android experience confuses people? Is it because, you know, for the price, the best phones for whatever reason just aren't what people are looking for? I think Windows Phone has so much room to grow, but it's interesting to see who's coming over to Windows Phone for the first time, so that the smartphone experience is a Microsoft product. That's really interesting. I think that those are people who are, likely to stay, because in general the OS is regarded as very well done. But what about those Android users? Android has the most market share right now. Will people continue to migrate over?
Yeah, that Android point is a good one. It was 23% came from Android. And the thing about that is, it seems like Android phones have kind of, because they can be on really cheap handsets, I think in some respects they've replaced feature phones as that free phone you get with a lot of carriers. So I think that's partially what's going on there, because Android phones have such a variety in price that your first phone could be an Android phone, whereas, you know, 3 years ago it would be a feature phone that came from like ZTE or something. So I wonder if it is just Android being hard to use and people switching, or if it's just this is the first phone they got because Android is on everything.
Yeah, I don't want to make too much out of these numbers. I mean, it's one data point, but we have seen all of the different services tracking a rise in Windows Phone over the past couple of quarters. So it's good news for Microsoft, especially because they're actually reorganizing their entire business around devices and services. And Windows Phone is central to that strategy. It's devices and its services. All things D's Kara Swisher says sources say Microsoft's got a restructure in the works. They're still trying to work out the details, but the idea is that they would organize around that devices and services company that Steve Ballmer mentioned in a letter to shareholders back in October. Larger roles would be expected for people, you may not have heard these words, but pay attention, Satya Nadella, president of the servers and tools division, Tony Bates, president of the Skype communications division, Don Matrick, president of the interactive entertainment division. How Windows fits into this, Windows writ large on the desktop, seems to be, according to the sources, the sticking point for how they finish this reorganization. Shareholders are starting to get a little pushier about things. Analysts are saying, like, oh, you should get rid of your Xbox division, or you should sell off this part of the company. Peter, if somebody came to you and said, look, Peter Wells, you're a smart guy, we want you to figure out what Microsoft, how Microsoft would be organized, what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I'd probably, you know, burst out crying. That's such a massive thing to do. I honestly wouldn't have a clue what Microsoft needs to do at this stage. I mean, they've got so many amazing products that kind of don't talk to each other, or you know, and it feels like, you know, when they turned say Windows 8 into a very shiny touchable interface and really kind of alienated a lot of enterprises with that. You know, we're seeing them bringing back the start button and all of those kind of things to kind of placate that older market. It's just, I feel so sorry for Microsoft. Every time they try something really interesting on one hand, they kind of get scolded in one of their other markets. So I really have no idea. I mean, yeah, look, they've got some amazing services. They've got some amazing products. I'd love to see. I really am rooting for Microsoft at this point. I don't know what the hell for them to do, though.
Hey, and people made a lot about this devices and services part of this, right? Whether it's also an indication Microsoft would get more into making hardware. Sarah, what's your best bet for how Microsoft restructures?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of this has to do with the shrinking PC market. So, you know, people say, well, where's Windows fitting into all of this stuff? You know, you've got your Xbox division, you've got Windows devices, you've got services that Microsoft is pushing really hard to get people into, you know, paying monthly subscriptions for cloud storage and that sort of thing. And that's all, I think, the right move. I think that that's smart of Microsoft. And I think that, yes, ultimately Microsoft will become a devices and a services company, and it won't look like the Microsoft of today. But it's kind of like the market is changing around Microsoft. So I think there is a little bit of like, wait and see how things shake up in the next couple of years as well. So the whole, you know, Steve Ballmer saying, well, this is what we are last October is kind of a planting a seed, because they're sort of taking a gamble on how they think that trends will continue to go.
And it's a little bit of Steve Ballmer trying to prove that he still needs to be in this position. I don't know how serious the shareholders take it, but there's a lot of talk out there that he needs to go. He needs to leave Microsoft. They need a new CEO. As you get to hang out with Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott on Windows Weekly from time to time, does that give you any extra insight into what Microsoft might be up to?
Well, the insight I've gotten from those folks has been pretty much how siloed Microsoft has been for years, and that is not changing. It takes some really tough people like Steven Sinofsky to basically try to take their political power effectively in Microsoft, go to the top of something, and then try to rework something entirely. But that also caused a lot of issues internally, because there's these divisions, and these divisions are causing Microsoft a lot of issues. If you think about that whole Kin debacle, if you remember the Kin phone, like that operating system got killed because they were developing Windows Phone 7 at the time. This infighting was going on. They crippled one device that could have been really something special because another division was angry. So if Microsoft can flatten out a bit, if they can figure out, okay, this is our leader, we're going to listen to this person, and this is the way we're going to do this, instead of having these five or six different divisions that are constantly fighting each other, they should be working towards one goal, and that's one Microsoft. Kind of like how Sony has this issue, they have the same thing, and they're trying to have the same flat one Sony concept.
And it does seem devices and services does seem to be the right way to do this. Whether you can get the organization internally structured around it or not is a whole different question, I guess. But you have Xbox, you have Microsoft Surface, you have Microsoft Mouse, but you know, possibly a Microsoft-made phone in the offing. That's your devices, and your operating systems are around that device's strategy. And services actually is Microsoft's strength. in a lot of way. A lot of people see the enterprise services and the cloud services as the thing Microsoft does well. When you compare cloud services from Apple with cloud services from Microsoft, there's no comparison at all. And SkyDrive just keeps getting better and better and more attractive as they roll out more features to it and it gets more robust. So I do think this is the right direction. It's all in the execution, as usual. Another execution-oriented maneuver is how Mozilla gets their Firefox OS onto devices. We've been talking about Foxconn being one of the ways they might do it, and we got more on that today, Sarah.
Yeah, Honhai, which is basically the parent company, aka Foxconn Technology Group, has announced at Computex that it is developing more than five devices using that Firefox OS, a tablet computer being one of them. But company executives were eager to say smartphones, TVs, that kind of stuff. Foxconn makes 40% of the world's consumer electronics, which is pretty impressive. Of course, that includes iPhones and iPads. But we reported last week that Apple was moving away to Pegatron as their dominant component maker, which obviously, you know, leaves Foxconn with some manpower to work on other things. And of course, the Mozilla Group wants to compete with iOS, wants to compete with Android, the two obviously most dominant OSs for smartphones and tablets, not even getting into TVs. Back in February, we saw Firefox preview the first Firefox Open Mobile OS, announced that 18 major telecom operators would support Firefox devices. We had the, what was the name of the Spanish phone that was running the Firefox OS? Good phone? I'm drawing a blank too, of course. Should have written it down. But that, you know, it limited quantities, but sold really well. People were very, very interested in it. And apparently Foxconn is going to hire 500 to 1,000 engineers in the Kaohsiung region in southern Taiwan to develop web-based software, including Firefox, which is a Foxconn general manager, Young Liu, said at a news conference in Taipei. Also said the devices will be under client brands. So Foxconn is not getting into like the Foxconn phone or that sort of thing. It's the way that they've done things in the past. It's just that they're going to be working with Firefox. Ayaz, what do you make of this? Does it seem like Firefox and Foxconn partnering up is a smart move for both brands? Does Firefox gain more than Foxconn, or the other way around?
Well, Foxconn needs to diversify as much as it can. Relying on Apple and producing products for that company, not exclusively, but being one of its major, assembler and manufacturer, that can be troubled, as Apple's having issues when it comes to if Apple is going to use Foxconn. So Foxconn needs to have as many clients as it can. And if Firefox or Mozilla is going to be giving Foxconn money, that's going to be good for Foxconn. As for Mozilla's aspirations to have a mobile operating system that's going to be any good on tablets and on phones, I don't think that's even possible. I'm sorry. I've seen the mock-ups. I don't know if this is going to be something huge. I just think it's going to be another also-ran, because there's so many larger players out there. Having a web-based operating system as a mobile phone, that's basically what iOS tried to be in the first place, and that was replaced by all these apps. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out for Mozilla.
I disagree. I think this is a good bet. And maybe I don't disagree that you might be right in the end, but I think they have more of a chance, I guess, is what I'm saying. I was it Geek's phone? Is that the one you were trying to think of?
Yep, that was
Sarah?
It, Tom. Thank you.
Okay, I didn't remember that. I did a quick Google search. But I think it's really good to have another OS, and I was more like Ayaz in my opinion of this, like, oh, it's a good try, but I doubt it'll catch on, until they partnered with Foxconn. I mean, Honhai Precision knows what they're doing with Foxconn. So getting onto five devices, that says a lot. And where they have a chance to make a big impact is in the emerging markets, which is what we were talking about with Windows Phone. It's what we're talking about with lots of other phones as having a chance. And I think that I would at least give them even money of developing like a 5-10% market share in emerging markets, at least, which might be enough. I don't know. That
apparently it is.
We're done with the Foxconn.
Foxconn. Just like I couldn't get my foxes straight. I'm like, Foxconn is doing, talking about Fox Firefox. I'm lost. Sorry.
Let's move on to the randomizer. A truckload of E.T. Atari cartridges has long been rumored to be in a landfill somewhere in New Mexico. And now The Verge reports that a film crew, this is via Gameological and KRQE.com. I think it's a television or radio station, according to New Mexico's KRQE. A Canadian documentary team is trying to excavate the site and figure out if those E.T. cartridges are actually there. This is probably one of the worst video games ever made, by many people's opinion.
This is like a legendary story that Atari made this game that was so bad that they ended up, they never sold it, and they buried it. And the question is, did it really happen? I'm really curious if this, did it? Do we know if it actually happened? That's what this film's trying to do, right, Tom?
Yeah, they're trying to. There's a company that a garbage company operator, Joe Lewandowski, has said he knows where the trucks dumped their payload and what was inside. And I guess they're going to go and film. It's like Al Capone's vault with Geraldo back in the day. You know, they're going to, instead of being live though, they're going to drill away with a jackhammer at the concrete and see if they come up with ET cartridges. Or will they come up with some rare Atari game that has never been seen before?
Or maybe it's the greatest ET game ever. We just never knew it. It was just so great, it would blow our minds back then. So they're like, you know what, we can't put this on the world.
Yeah, the bad version was a diversion exactly. Away from something else.
This was the true ET game that was never allowed to see the light of day.
Snopes considers this true, so... You know, if you believe Snopes, which often I do, then there you go.
On the ball.
I just want to know how much of the documentary is like digging.
Yeah, right. I know. So they find them. Now what?
You got to test the game, right? Like, you got to have a work Atari and try it out.
No, it's a mystery.
It would make an interesting Vine video, but maybe not a full length documentary.
The first Vine documentary. I like it.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our last sponsor for today's show, but certainly not the least, TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and technology provider. Creative professionals of all levels use TechServe for deployment, Fortune 100 companies, all the way down to individual customers. I was actually at graduation dinner this weekend with some relatives. They were talking about being in the Delta terminal in LaGuardia because my cousin is going to school out in New York starting this next fall, and they were raving about all the iPads in the Delta terminal, how you could order food from them and check your email. And I said, I know the company that did that. It was TechServe. They handled this for OTG Management, the hospitality company behind Delta's terminals. I said, you know, they also have them in Toronto and Minneapolis. And they're like, well, we went to Minneapolis. We saw them there too. They're all over the place. If you would like the company that does stuff like that to deploy your Apple, your Avid, your Adobe solutions anywhere in the United States, whether you're already committed to iPads or just getting started, check out TechServe. It's TechServe. They're able to do full lifecycle management for all your technology needs by providing the devices you need, getting them up and running, teaching you and your staff how to effectively using them, maintaining them so they keep working efficiently, and ongoing support. So if you ever encounter a problem anywhere in the enterprise, helps just a phone call away. If your business is considering integrating iOS technology at your workplace, contact TechServe today. Receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. Just visit techserve.com/TNT and TechServe will help you assess your current or future iPad needs and give you advice to make it a success. That's TechServe, techserve.com/TNT. And we thank TechServe for their support of Tech News Today. What's happening on the calendar, Sarah?
Well, we got Computex happening in Taipei. It starts officially, although we've already heard some announcements from the show, officially tomorrow and runs through the end of the week on the 8th. Computextaipei.com for more information.
Yeah, it's funny how conferences these days, you basically know they are starting because all of the news is over. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to happen at E3 too, right? Microsoft, Sony going to have their announcements next week on June 10th. The show doesn't start till June 11th, but that's the news cycle. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail regarding HTC's 12-inch RT tablet that they canceled. Waiting. And we'll play it now.
Waiting. From a caller who didn't give his name.
It's just not playing.
Mm. Or maybe.
Hey, guys. I was listening to your show on Friday where you were talking about the HTC 12-inch tablet running Windows RT that was canceled. And I'm really wondering if this is the case of a manufacturer looking for a scapegoat. I mean, Windows RT may not have been this grand success, but a few million of them have been sold. It's just their Surfaces, the best Windows RT devices you can buy. I mean, why would anybody buy anything else if you're buying a Windows RT device? And frankly, why would anybody want a 12-inch tablet? This just seems like a poorly planned idea from HTC's fault, and blaming it on Windows RT's demand seems a bit misguided. Well, hopefully HTC gets some better direction, because, I mean, Android, iOS, or anything else, who wants a 12-inch tablet? Anyways, hope to hear some more of your thoughts on this. Thanks.
Peter, what do you think? I mean, Surface RT, Windows RT, they have their problems, but is it really more of a 12-inch tablet in this case?
Well, maybe it is. I've recently switched back to an iPad mini. I do like that smaller form factor. So, yeah, and I guess because I'm always carrying a laptop anyway, I don't need a bigger tablet. So he might have a very good point.
I don't know if I'd want a 12-inch tablet, but I can't say that nobody would.
I guess it depends on the use case, right? If it's if these things from like ASUS we're talking about today are like 11.6-inch devices, so they're about 12 inches when it comes to tablets. I'm still very curious about a 12-inch Windows RT device, because if you can actually have a 12-inch Windows 8 device, that's a bit more useful than this sort of half operating system that Microsoft has.
Yeah, battery life, I guess. For 12 inches, you need a lot of power to power the display, so... I don't know. I'm trying to help.
It's weird how smartphones kind of keep inching into bigger territory. I'm using the word inching, you know, not necessarily by inches, but it kind of seems to be the trend is like, how big can we make it? And with tablets, it doesn't work that way. You know, the bigger the tablet, the more I'm like, oh, that seems older somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, you know, if that's just, if my mind will change eventually with the best 12-inch tablet ever, but it seems like... going smaller is the trend.
You could always get the Toshiba Excite 13. It was a 13-inch tablet that made no sense.
Maybe that's what we need to do, is not go to the 10. If they get really, really big, then they're onto something.
There you go.
I want that 80-inch tablet that Ballmer had in his office. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Peter Wells, as always, thank you for staying up and joining us from Australia. Always great to get your insight from down under. And let folks know what you're up to, where they can follow you online.
You can follow me on Twitter at FullTimeCasual, or I'm actually on app.net as Pounce if you want to follow me there. I don't know why you would, but say hello on Twitter.
P-O-U-N-C-E on app.net.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Do you remember the social network Pounce, P-O-W-N-C-E?
No, sorry, that is how I spell it, yeah.
P-O-W-N-C-E.
That was the very bad joke that I was going for, but yeah.
And when
you were
on Pounce, were you app.net?
I was ahead of my time. Yeah, I
exactly.
was.
All right, check him out. Follow him FullTimeCasual on Twitter.com. Thanks again, man. Great to have you. Also, submit stories at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place to let us know what stories you might like to hear us talk about on the show. We look at what you submit and how many votes they're getting. So it's important to vote them up or vote them down if you don't like them at technewstoday.reddit.com. Don't forget, we're doing a hangout June 12th. That's 9 days from now on a Wednesday, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be just chatting with folks about what they think of the show, what they like, what they don't like, just brainstorming ways to keep it fresh, keep it exciting, keep it improving. We'd love to hear your guys' ideas, so join us for that. You can always find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT, email us tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Scott Budman joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.